Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Columbia Episode 3, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 9, La Violencia, Colombia's Darkest Period. As Colombia moved further into the 20th century, the ideological and social tensions that had been brewing for decades erupted into one of the bloodiest conflicts in its history. The period known as La Violencia, 1948-1958, was a catastrophic civil conflict that saw entire regions descend into chaos as political rivalries turned into widespread violence. What began as a dispute between the conservative and liberal parties soon morphed into a brutal war marked by massacres, political assassinations, and guerrilla warfare. Origins of La Violencia. The roots of La Violencia can be traced back to the bitter rivalry between the conservative and liberal parties that had dominated Colombian politics for over a century. Although conflicts between the two factions had flared up intermittently throughout the 19th and early 20th centuries, the situation took a dramatic turn in the 1940s. The election of Jorge Eliécer Gaitán, a charismatic and populist leader of the Liberal Party, was seen as a beacon of hope for the working class and disenfranchised Colombians. His promises of social justice, land reform, and anti-elitism made him a target of the ruling oligarchy. On April 9, 1948, Gaitán was assassinated in Bogotá, triggering El Bogotazo, a massive riot that left much of the capital city in flames. The chaos soon spread beyond Bogotá, igniting violent clashes between liberals and conservatives in rural areas. Escalation and widespread bloodshed. Following Gaitán's assassination, political violence became endemic. Conservative-led government forces cracked down on liberal supporters, while liberal guerrilla groups took up arms in retaliation. Entire villages were razed, thousands were killed, and civilians were caught in the crossfire between armed factions. Some of the worst atrocities took place in rural areas, particularly in Tolima, Boyaca, and Cundinamarca, where mutilations, executions, and forced displacements became common. The term culavitas referred to pro-conservative paramilitary groups that carried out state-sponsored terror, while guerrilleros were liberal-aligned insurgents who fought back against government forces. The methods of violence became increasingly gruesome. Stories of pajaros, hired killers, who executed political opponents, and corte de franela, a brutal throat-slitting technique used by assassins, shocked even hardened war veterans. The brutality of La Violencia left an indelible mark on Colombian society, creating a culture of fear and political mistrust. Impact on society and economy. La Violencia devastated Colombia's economy. Farms were abandoned as rural populations fled to cities in search of safety, leading to increased urban poverty and crime. Agriculture, which had been the backbone of Colombia's economy, suffered immense losses as infrastructure was destroyed and trade networks collapsed. The psychological scars of the conflict ran deep. Families were torn apart, and many young Colombians grew up in an environment where violence was the norm. The social divisions created during this period would persist for decades, influencing the rise of guerrilla movements like the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC, and the National Liberation Army, ELN, in the 1960s. The end of La Violencia and the National Front. By the late 1950s, both the liberals and conservatives realized that the country could not sustain the bloodshed indefinitely. In 1957, an agreement was reached to form the National Front, a power-sharing arrangement where the two parties would alternate in ruling the country for the next 16 years. Although the National Front brought an end to La Violencia, it did not address the underlying causes of the conflict. The agreement excluded new political movements from governance, leading to the marginalization of leftist and revolutionary groups. This exclusion planted the seeds for the next era of conflict, the rise of guerrilla warfare, and the drug trade in the late 20th century. Conclusion: a nation scarred. La Violencia was one of the darkest chapters in Colombia's history, leaving a legacy of pain, loss, and unresolved social issues. The conflict exposed the deep-seated inequalities and political dysfunction that had plagued the nation for centuries. As Colombia emerged from this period, it faced new challenges that would shape the modern era, from leftist insurgencies to the rise of the narcotics industry. In the next chapter, we will explore the rise of guerrilla groups and the transformation of Colombia into a battleground for revolutionary warfare and organized crime. Chapter 10: The Birth of Guerrilla Warfare. As Colombia transitioned from the brutal period of La Violencia, 1948 to 1958, into the mid-20th century, the political landscape did not find stability. Instead, unresolved inequalities, the continued exclusion of leftist groups from governance, and the global influence of the Cold War led to the emergence of guerrilla warfare. Armed revolutionary movements, inspired by socialist and Marxist ideologies, began to challenge the state, setting the foundation for what would become a decades-long internal conflict. The roots of guerrilla movements. The formation of guerrilla groups in Colombia was deeply tied to the socioeconomic conditions of the 1950s and 1960s. The exclusionary nature of the National Front government, 1958 to 1974, which alternated power between the conservative and liberal parties, left little room for alternative political movements. This effectively silenced left-wing opposition and radicalized many who had hoped for reform through legal means. One of the major factors that fueled guerrilla movements was the agrarian crisis. Land ownership in Colombia remained vastly unequal, with a small elite controlling large estates while peasants struggled to survive as tenant farmers or day laborers. The failures of land reform programs only exacerbated tensions, leading rural communities to support armed resistance as a means of securing their economic rights. The global context of the Cold War also played a significant role. Inspired by the success of the Cuban Revolution, 1959, and the socialist movements in Latin America, leftist militants in Colombia sought to create their own revolutionary struggle. Soviet, Cuban, and Chinese ideologies influenced the leaders of these movements, who saw armed struggle as the only way to achieve true social justice. The formation of the FARC and ELN. The Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC, was established in 1964 as the military wing of the Colombian Communist Party, PCC. Originally, FARC consisted of rural self-defense groups that had organized to resist government repression and paramilitary violence. Over time, FARC transformed into a full-fledged guerrilla movement, advocating for land redistribution, anti-imperialism, and a socialist state. The National Liberation Army, ELN, was founded in the same year by university students and radical intellectuals influenced by Che Guevara's guerrilla warfare tactics and the Cuban Revolution. Unlike FARC, which had strong rural ties, ELN focused on urban-based revolutionary warfare and targeted Colombia's economic infrastructure, such as oil pipelines and multinational corporations. Both FARC and ELN rapidly expanded, using guerrilla tactics such as ambushes, kidnappings, and sabotage against government forces and economic targets. They gained support from disenfranchised rural populations, who viewed them as defenders against landowning elites and corrupt state officials. Government responses and counterinsurgency. The Colombian government, backed by the United States, responded with military force and counterinsurgency campaigns. In the 1960s and 1970s, Plan Lazo was implemented as an effort to weaken guerrilla strongholds. The government launched aerial bombardments, assassinations of suspected rebels, and the expansion of military presence in rural areas. However, rather than eliminating guerrilla groups, these harsh tactics often backfired. Many peasants, instead of aligning with the government, turned to the guerrillas for protection, further strengthening the insurgencies. As a result, the conflict escalated into a prolonged, multi-decade struggle. Guerrilla warfare and financing. The role of the drug trade. By the late 1970s and early 1980s, guerrilla movements faced financial struggles. To sustain their operations, FARC and ELN turned to various funding sources, most notably the cocaine trade. As Colombia became the world's largest cocaine exporter, guerrilla groups levied taxes on drug cartels in exchange for protection, controlled coca-growing regions, and smuggled narcotics to finance their war against the state. The drug trade significantly altered the nature of guerrilla warfare in Colombia. What began as an ideological struggle increasingly became intertwined with organized crime. This not only strengthened guerrilla groups but also attracted new enemies, paramilitary organizations and drug cartels, who sought to protect their own interests. The emergence of paramilitary forces. By the 1980s, wealthy landowners, multinational corporations, and drug cartels, fearing guerrilla extortion and kidnappings, began funding right-wing paramilitary groups. The most infamous of these was the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, AUC, which engaged in mass killings, assassinations, and forced displacements of civilians suspected of supporting guerrillas. Paramilitaries, often working in coordination with elements of the Colombian military, became one of the most brutal forces in the conflict. Their actions led to massacres of peasants, journalists, and leftist activists, escalating the war to new levels of violence. Failed peace attempts and continued violence. Throughout the 1980s and 1990s, various attempts were made to broker peace between the government and guerrilla groups. In 1984, President Belisario Betancur negotiated a ceasefire with FARC, leading to the creation of the Union Patriotica, UP, a legal political party for leftist activists. However, right-wing paramilitary groups assassinated thousands of UP members, forcing many leftists back into armed struggle. In the 1990s, President Cesar Gaviria initiated peace talks with the ELN and other rebel factions, but deep mistrust and continued violence prevented any lasting agreements. Conclusion: a conflict deeply rooted in history. The birth of guerrilla warfare in Colombia was not merely a product of Cold War ideologies. It was the culmination of decades of inequality, exclusion, and political violence. By the late 20th century, the conflict had evolved beyond a simple leftist uprising. It had become a complex war involving the government, guerrilla groups, paramilitary forces, and drug cartels. In the next chapter, we will examine the narco wars of the 1980s and 1990s, focusing on the rise of powerful drug cartels such as the Medellin and Cali cartels, their impact on Colombian society, and the escalation of violence that would make Colombia one of the most dangerous countries in the world. Chapter 11: The Cocaine Empire, Pablo Escobar and Narcoterrorism. As Colombia entered the 1980s, a new force emerged that would fundamentally alter its political, economic, and social fabric: the rise of the drug cartels. While guerrilla movements had long been a challenge for the Colombian state, the advent of large-scale cocaine trafficking introduced a new era of violence, corruption, and international notoriety. At the heart of this transformation was Pablo Escobar, the infamous drug lord who built the Medellin cartel into the most powerful criminal organization in the world. This chapter explores the rise of Escobar, the war between the cartels and the state, and the devastating impact of narco-terrorism on Colombia. The birth of the cocaine trade. Colombia's involvement in the international drug trade began in the 1970s, when small-scale traffickers smuggled marijuana and, later, cocaine into the United States. However, it was in the early 1980s that the trade exploded, fueled by high demand from North America and an abundance of coca cultivation in the Andes. The Colombian jungle provided ideal conditions for coca production, and criminal organizations quickly realized that refining and exporting cocaine was far more profitable than other illicit trades. The Medellin cartel, led by Pablo Escobar, and the Cali cartel, led by the Rodriguez-Orihuela brothers, emerged as the dominant forces in this lucrative industry. These cartels built vast networks that controlled every aspect of cocaine production, from cultivation to distribution, leveraging brutality, corruption, and political manipulation to expand their empires. Pablo Escobar, the rise of a drug kingpin. Born in Rio Negro, Antioquia, in 1949, Pablo Escobar rose from poverty to become one of the wealthiest and most powerful figures in Colombia. By the early 1980s, Escobar's Medellin cartel was responsible for as much as 80% of the cocaine smuggled into the United States, generating billions of dollars annually. Escobar used his wealth to buy influence, infiltrating politics, law enforcement, and even the judicial system. His Robin Hood-like tactics, building houses, schools, and soccer fields for the poor, earned him significant public support, especially in Medellin. However, his brutal enforcement methods, including assassinations, car bombings, and kidnappings, revealed his ruthless ambition. The Medellin cartel's war on the state. Escobar's power did not go unchallenged. As the Colombian government, with increasing pressure from the United States, attempted to crack down on drug trafficking, Escobar retaliated with extreme violence. This period, known as narco-terrorism, saw some of the bloodiest years in Colombia's history. Key events included the assassination of Justice Minister Rodrigo Lara Bonilla, 1984. After Lara Bonilla initiated legal actions against traffickers, he was gunned down in Bogota, signaling the beginning of open warfare between the government and the cartels. The bombing of Avianca Flight 203, 1989. Escobar ordered the bombing of a commercial airliner, killing all 107 passengers in an attempt to assassinate a presidential candidate. The siege of the Palace of Justice, 1985. The M-19 guerrilla group, allegedly funded by Escobar, stormed the Supreme Court building in Bogota, leading to the deaths of over 100 people, including half the country's Supreme Court justices. Escobar's reign of terror forced the Colombian government into a difficult position. While some officials supported extradition treaties with the U.S. to remove cartel leaders, others feared cartel reprisals. The debate over extradition would become one of the most contentious issues of the time. The Cali cartel, a different approach. While Escobar dominated headlines with his violent tactics, the Cali cartel took a more discreet approach, relying on bribery, financial sophistication, and political infiltration rather than overt terrorism. By the early 1990s, Cali controlled a significant portion of the cocaine market, and its leaders, Gilberto and Miguel Rodriguez Orejuela, focused on corrupting institutions rather than fighting them. The fall of Pablo Escobar. The manhunt for Escobar intensified in the early 1990s with the formation of Los Peeps, a vigilante group composed of his former associates and enemies, as well as increasing cooperation between the Colombian military and U.S. intelligence. In 1991, Escobar surrendered under a controversial agreement that allowed him to be housed in his own luxurious, self-designed prison, La Catedral. However, after authorities attempted to move him to a regular prison in 1992, Escobar escaped, triggering an all-out pursuit. On December 2, 1993, Escobar was finally tracked down in Medellin. In a dramatic rooftop shootout, Colombian security forces killed him, marking the symbolic end of the Medellin cartel. His death, however, did not end the drug trade. It merely shifted the balance of power to other groups. The legacy of narcoterrorism. The destruction of the Medellin cartel did little to bring peace to Colombia. Instead, the power vacuum left behind was quickly filled by new criminal organizations, paramilitary groups, and remnants of the guerrilla movements. The Cali cartel enjoyed dominance for a few more years before being dismantled in 1995 to 1996, but drug trafficking remained a cornerstone of Colombia's underground economy. The war on drugs also led to long-term consequences. Widespread corruption. The vast wealth of drug traffickers compromised police, politicians, and judges, making it nearly impossible to combat organized crime effectively. International involvement. The U.S. increased its role in Colombia through Plan Colombia, an initiative aimed at eradicating coca cultivation and strengthening the military against cartels and insurgents. Rise of new criminal groups. After the fall of the major cartels, smaller, more fragmented groups such as the North Valley Cartel and Bakrim, Bandas criminals, emerged, continuing the cycle of violence and trafficking. Enduring social trauma. The violence of the 1980s and 1990s left deep scars on Colombian society, with entire generations growing up amidst fear, displacement, and instability. Conclusion. The next chapter of Colombia's struggle. While Pablo Escobar's death marked the end of an era, it did not bring peace to Colombia. The drug trade remained lucrative, and new actors continued to emerge in the struggle for control. As the government adapted its strategies, focusing on both military and diplomatic solutions, the next major challenge would be the continuing guerrilla warfare and the attempt to negotiate peace with insurgent groups. In the next chapter, we will explore the escalation of FARC and ELN conflicts, the rise of paramilitary forces, and the U.S.-backed military interventions that shaped the next phase of Colombia's history. Chapter 12. The fight against the cartels. Following the fall of Pablo Escobar in 1993 and the dismantling of the Medellin cartel, Colombia was far from achieving peace. While the end of Escobar's reign signified a significant victory for the state, it also led to the rise of new criminal organizations, shifting the landscape of the drug trade. The Cali cartel, which had long operated with more subtlety and financial sophistication than Medellin, assumed dominance. However, its control was short-lived as the Colombian government, backed by U.S. initiatives such as Plan Colombia, intensified its efforts to dismantle the country's narco-empires. This chapter delves into the continued war against drug trafficking, the role of paramilitary groups, the emergence of new cartels, and the long-term consequences of Colombia's battle against organized crime. The fall of the Cali cartel. Unlike the Medellin cartel, which thrived on violence and intimidation, the Cali cartel adopted a more strategic approach, embedding itself into Colombia's political and financial systems. Led by the Rodriguez Orejuela brothers, the cartel controlled a vast network of cocaine distribution, using sophisticated money laundering techniques to evade authorities. At its peak, the Cali cartel was responsible for over 80% of the cocaine entering the U.S. market. However, by the mid-1990s, international pressure mounted against Colombia to take decisive action. President Ernesto Samper's administration, 1994 to 1998, was tainted by allegations that his election campaign had received funding from the cartel, leading to a major political scandal known as the Proceso 8000. Despite these challenges, the Colombian government, with intelligence support from DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, launched a crackdown on Cali's operations. Between 1995 and 1996, the Colombian National Police arrested most of the cartel's leadership, effectively dismantling the organization. However, the vacuum left by Cali's fall did not eradicate the cocaine trade. It simply fragmented criminal operations, leading to the rise of multiple, smaller but equally ruthless cartels. The rise of new cartels and paramilitary involvement. With the Medellin and Cali cartels dismantled, the North Valley cartel and emerging criminal bandas, Bakrim, filled the void. The North Valley cartel, known for its extreme violence and alliances with former paramilitary groups, dominated the drug trade in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Unlike their predecessors, these groups avoided high-profile attacks against the state, instead choosing to operate in secrecy and rely on corruption to maintain power. The role of paramilitary organizations, particularly the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, AUC, also became more pronounced during this period. While originally formed to counteract guerrilla insurgencies such as FARC, Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, and ELN, National Liberation Army, paramilitaries soon became deeply entangled in drug trafficking, extortion, and massacres. The AUC controlled significant portions of rural Colombia, often displacing thousands of civilians and committing human rights abuses. At its peak, the AUC was responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of Colombians, targeting not only guerrillas but also social leaders, journalists, and indigenous communities suspected of sympathizing with leftist rebels. Plan Colombia and U.S. involvement. In 2000, the Colombian government, under President Andrés Pastrana, launched Plan Colombia, a joint effort with the United States aimed at combating drug trafficking and insurgent groups. The initiative involved billions of dollars in military aid, aerial fumigation of coca fields, and intelligence sharing programs. While Plan Colombia led to short-term successes, such as the eradication of thousands of hectares of coca crops and the weakening of FARC's control over certain territories, it also had severe unintended consequences. Displacement of rural communities. The indiscriminate fumigation of coca fields led to environmental damage and the forced displacement of thousands of farmers who relied on coca cultivation for survival. Strengthening of drug production in neighboring countries. As coca fields were eradicated in Colombia, production shifted to Peru and Bolivia, highlighting the persistent nature of the drug trade. Increased guerrilla and paramilitary violence. The heavy militarization of Colombia led to escalated violence, with insurgents and paramilitary groups retaliating against government forces. The shift from cartels to Bakrim, bandas criminals. By the late 2000s, traditional cartel structures had evolved into smaller, more flexible criminal groups known as Bakrim, short for bandas criminals. These groups, such as Los Rastrojos and Los Urabinos, controlled key drug routes and engaged in extortion, human trafficking, and illegal mining. Unlike the cartels of the past, Bakrim avoided international attention by maintaining a lower profile. Instead of direct confrontations with the state, they focused on controlling local economies and infiltrating municipal governments through corruption. Successes and failures in the war on drugs. The Colombian government's war on drugs has seen mixed results. While significant cartel leaders have been captured and some regions have stabilized, the cocaine trade remains a multi-billion dollar industry. The persistence of drug trafficking is due to several factors. Global demand. The continuous demand for cocaine, particularly in North America and Europe, ensures that drug production remains profitable. Corruption and weak institutions. Despite progress, corruption within law enforcement, politics, and the judiciary continues to enable criminal enterprises. Social inequality. Many impoverished Colombians remain dependent on the coca economy, as alternative economic opportunities are scarce in rural areas. Conclusion: Colombia's ongoing struggle. While the Colombian government has achieved notable victories in dismantling large-scale cartels, organized crime has not disappeared. It has simply adapted. The war on drugs remains a complex and evolving conflict, shaped by economic, political, and social dynamics. Looking ahead, Colombia faces a critical question. Can it break the cycle of drug-related violence and corruption, or will new criminal organizations continue to emerge? The next chapter will explore Colombia's shifting political landscape, the continued fight against guerrilla insurgencies, and the efforts to broker peace agreements that could redefine the country's future.